Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all and welcome to DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe, in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, rival factions within South Africa's ruling African National Congress, ANC, face off in central Johannesburg, highlighting deep divisions in the ruling party.
It is very unfortunate that in a democratic society, people want to stop people from expressing their views.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said that G20 countries are working on rules to improve conditions for investment in Africa. We hear from an academic telling us why there hasn't been enough investment flowing into the continent.
First of all, there is a hesitation on the European side regarding investment in Africa because of civil unrest, because of fragility, because of wars.
These stories plus our weekly segments, that is Africa on the Move and Making a Difference, in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Activists from rival factions of South Africa's African National Congress, ANC, faced off in central Johannesburg on Monday, highlighting deep divisions in the ruling party as pressure grows on President Jacob Zuma. The ANC, which led the struggle to end apartheid, has been rocked by poor recent local election results, largely blamed on Zuma's leadership and the country's mounting economic wars. Former ANC veterans surrounded the ANC's Luthuli House headquarters in Johannesburg after some party activists vowed to occupy the building to protest against how the party and government is being run. From Durban, Subri Govender reports.
It is very unfortunate that in a democratic society, people want to stop people from expressing their views. President Zuma is an obstacle for us to achieve our economic freedom objective. Therefore, that is the call.
Several hundred people wearing ANC T-shirts and shouting ANC slogans gathered a few hundred meters from the ANC headquarters, Luthuli House. They wanted to hand over a memorandum calling for the removal of President Jacob Zuma from office, but they were denied access to the building by hundreds of the ANC's military veterans. The march was dubbed Occupy Luthuli House, and one of the organizers, Sasoma Bungani, said they had gathered to show their disappointment over the ANC's internal structures and what he termed the ANC being at war within itself. Bungani said the ANC's National Executive Committee, NEC leaders, had failed to deal with the declining support among its people.
We have realized that those internal processes are not going to work for us. Hence, one of our demands is that the NEC, because it's failing to hold the president accountable, and that have led to our demise performance in the elections, they should all resign because they failed to play their role.
The military veterans, the ANC Youth League and the Women's League, who had barricaded Luthuli House to prevent the marches from entering it, said the demonstrators were what they termed mere thugs. The leader of the ANC's military veterans, Kebi Mapotso, said they would not allow anyone to undermine the freedom for which they had sacrificed their lives.
What we are worried also as MKMV is that it seems as if this thing is only here in Gauteng, and people who are wanting to demonstrate are from Gauteng, and we want to call upon the leadership of the ANC in Gauteng to really discipline these comrades, because they are behaving in an ill-disciplined manner.
The drama finally came to a peaceful end after the intervention of the ANC Secretary General Gwede Mantashe. Mantashe first addressed the people, who described themselves as defenders of the ANC headquarters.
We're appealing to you, comrades. You have done what you should do, defending your organization, defending your headquarters. That is good enough. Don't do something that will give them publicity. Don't try to beat them up. Don't try to do things. Because if you do that, you are giving them free airtime.
After addressing the military veterans, Mantashe walked over to the Occupy Luthuli House protesters and collected the memorandum calling for the removal of Zuma. The anti and pro demonstrations outside the ANC headquarters underlines the deep divisions that have arisen in the organization recently. The crisis that the ruling ANC is now facing is one of the most serious since its formation more than 100 years ago as a freedom organization, and since 1994, when it emerged as the ruling party after the country's first non-racial and democratic elections.
Subri Govinda reporting. Once again, some ANC members are asking for President Zuma's resignation. So how deep is the rift inside the ruling party? A question I put to Andrew Feinstein, former ANC member and anti-corruption campaigner based in London.
I think that the divisions are primarily over Jacob Zuma's leadership. But the problem is that a lot of people within the ANC who are disgruntled with Zuma's leadership have actually left the organization. So the organization is seeing it shrinking in numbers, but the majority of members who have stayed within the organization remain loyal to Jacob Zuma. The one exception to that is the province of Gauteng, which includes Johannesburg and Pretoria, where there is deep division within the provincial party about whether to support Zuma or not. And I think that the proposed march for this morning was really driven by people who describe themselves as children of the ANC, who are opposed to his leadership. And it's really around the sort of continuing economic and governmental chaos in the country, where Jacob Zuma has made certain decisions which primarily are made to benefit himself personally and his family financially. And they include dismissing a finance minister who wouldn't accede to some of his economic requests, particularly around a 1 trillion rand nuclear power deal between South Africa and Russia, which many people suspect is going to be a source of massive corruption, and that Zuma and his family will be primary beneficiaries of that.
Much of the internal trouble right now centers on the figure of Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan. Does he have enough support within the party to overcome his current troubles?
Well, Pravin Gordhan, who's in his second stint, is well respected in the business community, but his difficulty is that he doesn't have a strong constituency within the ANC. There are some people who are coming out in support of him, but many people within the ANC are rather supporting Zuma over Pravin Gordhan.
Is there a chance that the ANC can really reform and live to the expectations of those who voted it into power, especially the poor and those who expect services from the current leadership of President Jacob Zuma?
Whether it can be reformed is really a question about who is the next leader of the ANC. And at the moment, there is great division and jostling within the party between, on the one hand, Jacob Zuma, one of Jacob Zuma's former wives, who Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma, who has been president of the African Union, was a former health minister and foreign minister in South Africa. On the other side is Cyril Ramaphosa, a former unionist, a very wealthy businessman, and a former general secretary of the ANC. So the question is really, would a Ramaphosa presidency reform the ANC? On the one hand, it would definitely make it more competent in government. It would hopefully make it less corrupt, but whether it would make it an organization that was able to deliver, particularly for the poorest in South Africa's society, remains something of a moot question.
Andrew Feinstein, former ANC member and anti-corruption campaigner based in London.
News, analysis, and feature reports, all that here on Africa Link.
Gabon's opposition leader Jean Ping called on Monday for a general strike to protest against what he said was a fraudulent re-election victory by President Ali Bongo. Ping, who says he's now the leader of the Central African oil producer, said in a statement on his website that his fight was not over, even as calm returned to the capital following deadly riots last week. I'm now joined by my colleague Bakar Jalo, who has been following events in Gabon very closely.
Definitely, I think it's not a democratic process because there are channels in order for him to actually go about with his complaint. If he's not happy with the outcome of the elections, he could basically take it up with the court. But if he does realize that the local justice system there doesn't work for him, there are also different channels he could look into. For example, he could go into the international community, get the UN on board on this, and the UN can also have actions. The UN can you know, use diplomatic measures. If it doesn't work out, it can also use different options like sanctioning. They could sanction Gabon's main export, which is oil, and that could really batter the economy, and it could really affect the decision being made by the president. And secondly, Jean-Ping actually asking his supporters to take on to the streets. That's basically synonymous to declaring war in a country. If you are, as a presidential candidate, you want to become president of the country and you're not happy with the process, you can't ask your people to take on to the street and protest. It's basically taking the country from the frying pan into the fire.
So in other words, he's wrong to call for a general strike, and on top of that, declaring himself president.
It's definitely not the right thing to do.
Okay, well said then, Abu. Other observers think that since the two split the vote evenly, one option would be to work together. Do you see this happening anytime soon?
That's something you really cannot rule out, but the possibilities are slim given the tension at the moment, and the stakes are really high. Both men want to show that they are very powerful people. I mean, given Ali Bongo's history, I mean, talking about his father, Omar Bongo, who was the president of Gabon for quite a long time, and he took over from his father, I mean, he wouldn't basically just bow down to Jean-Ping. But then if you actually look at the relationship between the two, currently at the moment, they are adversaries, but they used to be brothers-in-law. Jean-Ping used to be married to the sister
exactly.
of Ali Bongo.
They were like buddies, if I may put it that way. So how is the current crisis in Gabon then bound to affect the economy of the country?
First of all, I think the first thing that's affected in any such situation is the economy. Even though there are news that on Monday the internet resumed, but right after when clashes broke out, the social media platforms were all shut down. Up at the moment, social media platforms, including Facebook and Twitter, they've still been blocked by the government. Electricity supply is just resuming. I mean, that's just partially. It hasn't really come out fully. And the banks and businesses are basically just operating. But the key sector, which is the oil sector, is still being affected by this conflict. Yeah. Gabon's main oil refinery, that is Sugara, just resumed production on Monday, but it's still been affected. And this conflict in Gabon at the moment has really dented Gabon's economy.
Thanks indeed, Abakal, for that insight on Gabon.
Africa on the move.
For Africa on the Move segment, we head to northern Ghana, where visually impaired people find themselves with little options of earning a living other than resorting to begging on the streets. But one man who is visually impaired and against all odds turned to music in order to live a modest life away from the torturous routine of begging like the others. Prince Mahama, as is known, formed the Savannah Band in 1997, and today he employs 6 performers, of which 5 are normal people. His band plays reggae music and Afro-pop and has been hired to perform at both the national level and corporate functions. Maxwell Souk in northern Ghana brings us the story of Prince Mahama and the Savannah Band.
It is Saturday night at Kalpohini in Tamale, and the Savannah Echoes Band are performing live to members of Ghana Federation of the Disabled. The owner of this band is Prince Mahama, a visually impaired man living in northern Ghana.
We play for any person who needs our performance, something like drinking spots, restaurants, hotels, get-togethers, like parties, dinners and so on, funerals and then weddings.
In northern Ghana, most visually impaired persons tend to begging to survive. Mahama told me he was pushed to go into begging at his childhood, but he rejected it.
Saying no to begging started when I was a small boy, when I became blind. Some people were asking me to also go on the street and then beg. And I told them that no, I wouldn't like to do that.
The next day, Sunday, Mahama and his band arrived at a local wedding ceremony to perform at Fuo, another neighborhood near Tamale. His local old-time songs got the audience gyrating to the rhythms.
Today is my first time, so I'm very happy. And I think no one will criticize them because they are disabled.
Today is my first time of meeting them. And their music and their everything is correct.
The Savannah Echoes Band first started in 1997, when Mahama graduated from Akropong School of the Blind as a teacher. Tahiru Abubakari is one of the six people working with this band. For him, it is a great opportunity to have met the founder.
It helps us a lot. We were about six or seven. We didn't know how to play any musical instrument, but this man was able to bring us together, teach us how to play. So we appreciate his effort.
The Savannah Echoes Band plays a mix of copyright music, ranging from reggae, hip-hop to locally composed songs. He and his team have performed at international functions. But lately, Prince Mahama is devoting time to offer free coaching to people interested in becoming instrumentalists.
Always he's in the radio station making announcement. Whoever you are, if you want to learn any instruments, you come to him. He will teach you how to do it.
Prince believes he has served society well. However, live band performance is wobbling in the north compared to the southern sector of Ghana. This has led many artists and music rappers rather live in abject poverty due to insufficient patronage.
Maxwell Sook reporting from northern Ghana. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said that G20 countries are working on rules to improve conditions for investment in Africa and added that she believed it was urgent for more direct foreign investment to flow into the continent.
We have 10-mal so viel Direktinvestitionen in der Europäischen Union als wir in ganz Afrika haben.
There is 10 times as much direct investment in the European Union as in the whole of Africa, despite the population of Africa being about twice as large and the average age being much lower. Meaning, we see that what is urgently needed is that there is more private investment in Africa, because state development aid is not enough at all.
Denn das kann man mit staatlicher Entwicklungshilfe alleine unter gar keinen Umständen auffangen.
But why hasn't there been enough foreign direct investment flowing into Africa? And to answer that, here's Professor Robert Kappel, a senior researcher at the German Institute of Global and Area Studies, GIGA.
First of all, there is a hesitation on the European side regarding investment in Africa because of civil unrest, because of fragility, because of wars, and only a few countries benefited during the last years from stronger investment behavior of the enterprises. For instance, Ethiopia or Kenya and some countries in East Africa benefited more from bigger interest of European enterprises on the African continent.
What do you make of the timing of the Chancellor's call for more foreign direct investments in Africa and the need to revise the rules?
Yeah, the timing is very interesting because German investors are hesitating very much. And Merkel now sees that China is on the run in Africa, has taken a lead position on the African continent, and some others also. And now German is a little behind, let's say, and sees that the other countries and other enterprises from other countries are much more important on the African continent. And she sees that German industry is in need of bigger markets also in Africa and is in need of resources of African countries for their own development.
Should we then take her message as a wake-up call for German investors, or it is a message of support because they've been reluctant to invest in other parts of Africa apart from South Africa due to concerns like security, taxes, among others? Over to you, Prof.
It's somehow a wake-up call. There's the idea that about 1,000 enterprises should come again to Africa and invest there, and it should not only be beneficial for the German side, but there's also a certain idea of solidarity, of cooperation with Africa, because Africa needs much more investment. It needs also money from the industrialized countries, and Germany, as the major power in Europe, could be one of the main actors on the African continent, and not introducing a new scramble for Africa where the big nations try to get hold of African countries.
How significant is the African continent at the G20 summit? I mean, will leaders be able to exhaustively tackle some problems affecting both Africa and the rest of the world, like global terrorism, trade deficits, or they're just preoccupied by their own interests?
No, the G20 summit is a very disappointing meeting. The summit has not tackled the problems of sustainable development. It has no ideas for solving the refugee crisis in Africa. It has no idea of moderating the problems of the climate issue, and it has no idea how to support African structural transformation. And all the measures they have taken at the G20 summit were just oriented towards the development of the G20 nations.
Professor Robert Kappel, a senior researcher at German Institute of Global and Area Studies.
Making a difference.
Now, in the news, we usually hear lots of troubling stories coming out of Sudan. Stories about human rights abuses, especially against women, and government clampdown on dissenting voices. Nevertheless, it's kind of refreshing to sometimes have a little bit of a positive story from there. The country is rich in music and art, but rarely do we hear anything about it. Today, Laura Wagenknecht brings a story to us about an all-women band, a small revolution for the Sharia-ruled country.
In Khartoum, the capital city of Sudan, 11 women and girls are on a mission. On the mission to become the first all-women band Sudan has seen since the 70s. They call themselves Salut Yalbanut, which literally means respect to the girls. Sarah is one of the singers of the band. She explains why it is hard for them to be in the music industry in Sudan.
The more you are in the art field, especially music, people are nice to you, but when it gets personal, they don't want to interact with you. They don't accept that. They don't see it as something respectful.
The group sings and raps in Arabic and English. They are from different age groups and from all over Sudan. In a war-torn country where tribal fights are a daily matter and society is divided, they stand united in their diversity. They get their strength from their music and push each other every day to stand strong. Hiba is another member of the band. She explains what they want to change in the society's mindset.
For girls in Sudan and women in Sudan to see an all-women band on stage performing, telling what they think honestly without being afraid of anything. I think this is very powerful. We want to help them to be able to speak up for themselves and to be confident. We hope and we want our messages to reach everywhere. We want everyone to listen, at least listen to what we're saying and try to understand it and respect it. And we want to change what's happening, yani, not just in Sudan. Everywhere where women are put down and told not to speak up, we want to change that. We really want to do that. We're not just singing. We want to make a change. We want to see that change.
Their songs are inspired by their life and by the daily struggles women are facing all around the globe. They sing about love, their culture, about war and peace.
That report was by Laura Wagenknecht. And now, before we leave you, a reminder of some of the stories we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. Rival factions within South Africa's ruling ANC party, first off in central Johannesburg, highlighting deep divisions in the ruling party. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said that G20 countries are working on rules to improve conditions for investment in Africa. We've also been hearing music from the all-women band in Sudan, a country that follows strict Sharia law. With that, we come to the end of the program. In case you'd like to comment on the stories that we've covered for you, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa link DW531100 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 491609575951 0. And this is Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.